Meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs will come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 17th, and my script is not in green, and it is 8:02 a.m. Members currently present include Representative Klayman, Representative Hannon, myself, co-chair Representative Drummond, and I understand Representative Jackson is on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Okay, we have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Today, our recording secretary is Shannon McCain, and Madison Truitt is our LIO moderator, assisting with teleconferencing support. Thank you both. My staff, Sarah Evans, is our committee aide. Today, we'll be hearing a presentation from former members of the Walker Administration Climate Change for Alaska Leadership Team, Michael Levine, Luke Hopkins, and Sam Schimmel, all of whom are obviously online. I would like to note that this presentation makes reference to two final reports that the leadership team presented to former Governor Walker's administration. For the people in the building, there are plenty of copies of these just outside the door on the table and also available digitally on BASIS. I understand that Michael Levine will be beginning the presentation. Mr. Levine, if I haven't murdered your name, please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you very much. You actually got my name correctly. My name is Michael Levine. I'm Senior Arctic Fellow for Ocean Conservancy. I'm actually here in Juneau, but for obvious reasons, talking to you.
Great. We appreciate that, and thank you very much, Mr. Levine. Welcome. Go ahead with your presentation.
Thanks very much. Thank you to the chairs and members of the committee. As you noted, we're going to talk today about the Climate Action for Alaska Leadership Team, its process and products. I'm going to begin by providing some basic background about the creation and operation of the team. Luke Hopkins will follow to discuss science and local governments, and then Sam Schimmel will follow to talk about the importance of action, impact to Native communities, and the role of youth within the Climate Action for Leadership Team process. At the outset, we realize that our hearts and minds are likely focused on the coronavirus crisis right now. We appreciate the attention paid to that issue and appreciate the fact that you have made time to continue your work on other important matters. In the absence of an ongoing pandemic, I certainly would have told you that action to mitigate and adapt to climate change is the most pressing issue confronting us today. It seems a bit strange, but I do look forward to the day when I can say that again. Also, I know we've heard a lot about the impacts of climate change in Alaska, and it doesn't seem like the right time to pile on with scary statistics or dire predictions. We would be remiss, though, not to start with at least some explanation of why we're here. To that end, the following is from a recent report by the International Arctic Research Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Quote, Alaska has recently experienced profound environmental change related to extreme weather events and deviations from the historical climate. Sustained warmth, sea ice loss, coastal flooding, river flooding, and major ecosystem changes have impacted the daily lives of Alaskans around the state. Temperatures have been consistently warmer than at any time in the past century. The growing season has increased substantially in most areas, and the snow cover season has shortened. Precipitation has increased, and like temperature, the changes vary regionally. The ocean around Alaska is now regularly warmer than at any time in the past 150 years. Affecting everything from algae to fisheries and human health. And to that, I'd add the following, which is actually from the Climate Action Leadership Team in a letter to the governor. Quote, the science is clear. Alaskan communities, economies, and ecosystems are changing rapidly. Emissions from the combustion of fossil fuels are the root cause of these changes, and there is an urgent need to take action to address both the causes and effects. Alaska has both the opportunity and obligation to be a leader in the effort to mitigate and adapt to the impacts of climate change. And I'd like to emphasize that point. To the extent there is any dispute or disagreement about the cause of changing climate, we should put that to bed. The science is clear. Anthropogenic emissions of greenhouse gases are the root cause of rapid climate change, and the impact of those changes affects all aspects of life in Alaska. Alaska is at the forefront of climate change. It's affecting our communities, our economies, our livelihoods, and our lives. These are not political issues, not Democratic or Republican issues. They are Alaska issues. We have to take action to address them. The nonpartisan issue of climate change in Alaska is borne out by the fact that when Governor Walker created the Climate Action for Alaska Leadership Team, He was continuing a line of action set in motion by his predecessors, Republican and Democratic, and he, of course, an independent. Luke is going to speak to that history more next. And I'm going to go through just a brief history of the creation and implementation of the plan here. Governor Walker created the team in October 2017 by administrative order and appointed members several weeks later. The members are on page 2 and 3 of the policy document. We were appointed for 3-year terms, and the lieutenant governor was the chair of the leadership team. As you can see, if you scan through the pictures, we're diverse in terms of geography, age, culture, and background. We have representatives from the energy industry, academia, NGOs, local governments, and communities, and as Sam will attest later on, youth members. Throughout the process, though, we took all of those hats off as much as we could and tried to come together to address our charge. The group met for the first time in Anchorage several weeks after being appointed. We spent most of that meeting learning and identifying the tasks ahead. In fact, I remember that the plan that came out of that meeting was called the, quote, lots of work plan, because we recognized the ambitious nature of the tasks we'd set for ourselves. Over the course of the next year, the team met 2 more times in person and held a series of teleconferences. We created 2 advisory bodies to provide expertise from the scientific community and oil and gas industry, and we organized working groups to focus on adaptation and mitigation efforts. There weren't funds available for listening sessions, but we sought to engage the broad public in Alaska by having task force members taking it upon themselves to convene listening sessions in their communities and in conjunction with other events like the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting in Kodiak. In parallel with the Climate Action for Alaska leadership team, Governor Walker had a cabinet climate team. That team, which was comprised of leadership at state agencies and in the governor's office, worked closely to support the leadership team's efforts. And let's move on to the outcomes of this process. So based on the administrative order, the team was charged with drafting a climate policy for the state and an action for implementing it. We spent a lot of time thinking through these documents, ways to make them useful, and how they could be implemented. I'm going to walk through them generally, and Luke and Sam are going to follow with some additional detail. Before I do that, though, it might make sense to identify what we thought we were doing. We crafted drafts that the governor could use to develop policies and actions for the administration. It was recognized that some actions could be implemented or adopted by the administration, and others were better worked through the legislative process. I think we all hoped that eventually there would be a statewide policy adopted by the legislature akin to the Alaska Arctic policy. It made sense to us that the administration could implement changes on its own while working with the legislature to craft that policy, and our drafts reflect that thinking. So let's start with the draft policy, which is the shorter of the 2 documents. The policy itself is premised on a vision for the future, a statement of purpose, and a statement of values. Those statements all reflect the overlapping environmental, ecological, cultural, and other imperatives we sought to address. For example, the vision, which is on page 5, was our effort to describe what could be achieved by development and implementation of comprehensive adaptation and mitigation efforts. It sought to promote social, ecological, cultural, and economic well-being, to help achieve food security, energy security, and environmental security, to ensure healthy ecosystems and prudent natural resource management, and to sustain a robust economy based on Alaskan innovation and resilience. The idea was to show that Alaska can take meaningful action to mitigate and adapt to climate change while recognizing that we are a resource-dependent state. The statement of purpose on page 6 explicitly recognizes that Alaska's economy is currently dependent on natural resource development, including oil and natural gas production. It goes on to note that although these resources are finite and contribute to global greenhouse gas emissions, they also support essential government services and our ability to adapt and respond. In effect, responsible development of those resources, at least in the short term, was not inconsistent with the policy statements or actions proposed. From that starting point, the actual draft policy was comprised of 6 broad statements focused on communities and partnerships, human and ecosystem health, economic opportunity, clean energy, outreach and education, and investment. They're on page 8. And as you can see, each of those statements was supported by objectives for the state to implement. In this way, we hope to craft a comprehensive policy that would encourage adaptation and mitigation, make Alaska a leader in these efforts, and provide for community, environmental, and ecological sustainability. you'll have the policy document, and Luke and Sam are going to delve into some of the specifics in these policy areas, so I'm going to leave my description general for now. I do want to reiterate, though, that this policy document reflected a broad consensus among the leadership team. All of us from our diverse backgrounds supported these basic ideas for moving forward. To me, that was a remarkable kind of consensus and reflects the significant need for state leadership in action. The second document we prepared is a draft action plan. This is the longer of the two documents, and it's really a roadmap for implementing the policy. It's a list of suggested actions tiering to the six policy goals and objectives underneath them. It wasn't as much of a consensus document and more of a menu. We hope that the next steps would be to work with the governor to prioritize these recommendations and implement them. In September 2018, these documents were transmitted to the governor along with a list of short-term actions and a cover letter. There were no priorities in the documents themselves, but the transmittal letter did provide recommendations for three immediate term steps: to appoint a permanent cabinet-level position focused on climate change, to commit to developing and promoting legislation that would codify the climate action policy and require steps to implement it, and to recognize that climate communications, outreach, and public education are essential. At the same time, the parallel cabinet climate team had developed a set of short-term actions that could be implemented. This list was also provided to the governor, and it has been provided with the documents for this hearing. Once these initial documents were submitted to the governor, the leadership team began thinking about the work that would come to prioritize and implement the proposed actions. In fact, the opening message in the policy states that we do not view these documents as the conclusion of our work. Rather, we hope to have created a platform from which the administration and future administrations can move forward to implement a climate policy and provide the needed personnel and support to take actions pursuant to that policy. We stand ready to assist the state in taking actions needed to ensure sustainable communities, vibrant and diverse economies, and healthy ecosystems for all Alaskans and future generations. Unfortunately, we never got that chance. Governor Dunleavy revoked the administrative order creating the team shortly after taking office and thereby ended our work. So, and with that summary, I will turn it over to Luke Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Mayor Hopkins, are you on the line with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead and put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Ed Drummond. My name is Luke Hopkins. I am former borough mayor of Fairbanks North Star Borough. Was in that position for six consecutive years. I was also of note on the Palin's sub-cabinet climate team, one of the members representing local government on the immediate action work group from approximately 2007 to 2009, which was one of the main forces that dealt with local communities in many, many interviews of the climate conditions and concerns that not only local governments had, but also their citizens in the communities across the state. One of the issues that I do want to stress is that with the Climate Action Leadership Team, the connection to local communities was and has been well established once again, and the effect of the past information that was presented to us through the documents from the sub-cabinet climate team under Governor Palin was a great resource and led us to many discussions with representatives from around the state. This document that we produced and the information and background for our Climate Action Leadership Team policy went for about 8 months. Our first meeting was mid-December, and by mid-August, we had of the following year, we had completed our meetings. We had three public sessions where we not only took comment, but sat as the full body. One of the major sessions was on UAF campus at the Geophysical Institute, and then in Fairbanks itself, where we also took further public testimony. The issue that is important here for what our team presented to the governor was that the representation across the state of Alaska, when you have the Alaska president of BP and representative from the Usabelli coal on our team, along with many, many others, it shows that the diverse interests and concerns that all of us have when we discuss the impact of climate change in Alaska. It is of note that the other important pieces is that our team put together and requested the governor to form a science advisory group and an oil and gas advisory group. So when our team sat around in our meetings and discussing aspects of what we should be considering as the high points of what our policy would be, we would send the questions to both the oil and gas advisory group and the science advisory group so that we had actually background into the ideas that we put forward as our objectives and goals. This action gave us the validity to our discussions and also to this public document. The issue with local communities, again, with the representation on the team, I felt was adequate compared to back in Palin's sub-cabinet panel, where the Immediate Action Work Group met quite regularly. And again, having that background information, we didn't have to repeat that process, but we were able to update it. So I feel that the issues for Alaskans across our state, the issues with climate change and how we are addressing it, or how we're waiting to address it once again, I find that it is frustrating that we're here once again with a very, very broad-reaching climate policy and a set of recommendations for the state of Alaska to move forward with, that ever since, even back in 1990, 30 years ago, with Governor Cooper and others calling for a Blue Ribbon Commission and actions that have taken place since then, we have a incredible record of our concerns and some actions that have been taken of note. But once again, 30 years later, we, through the review of past documents, we fast forward to today, and we once again put on the shelf a very robust and not minutia in the report, but talks about goals and objectives of how to once again deal with climate change issues that we know are occurring throughout our state. Let me just speak to one of the pieces that I have brought forward is that I do live on a large piece of property here in Fairbanks that is underlaid with permafrost, and in areas of my particular piece of property, there are subsidence areas where I don't even walk to impact the vegetation, and we're seeing that the subsidence across valleys in the Fairbanks area. So the question becomes, It's already occurring. Climate change, of course, is directly impacting our state in many, many ways. And how are we going to address it? And I certainly hope that there is some action that the state of Alaska, with its authority, can move forward with hopefully taking this latest set of policy recommendations and move forward with it instead of just shelving it once again, hiding it from the public the way that has occurred, and come up with a approach that continues the process that this team and past teams in the state have undertaken. Local governments, local communities are the entities that are stepping forward at this time, from Southeast Alaska all the way up to the areas on the North Slope and in the central part of the state, where they're developing their own plans through their own resources, trying to reach out to what needs to be undertaken is how do we address the change in climate in Alaska. We're not talking about weather from one week to another, but we're talking about these overall changes that we all are experiencing and the impact of those. So the one of the points that I would like to raise to this committee is that back under Sarah Palin, as my recollection has it, she had requested at the conclusion of the sub-cabinet panel a capital appropriation of $10 million, and that was approved by the legislature, and that has gone forward for the departments in the Alaska State Administration until we were informed by Governor Walker that the funding that Palin had put forward and was approved, it has been in the state departments covering expenditures on climate change until the final expenditure of the funds in 2016. So we have almost a decade of financial support that now has ended, and again, if we want to make advancements in this, it does take some funding. You can see that at the local level with what governments are doing through the state. They're expending money. They're expending effort. We're all trying to cope with it. But I believe that as we continually restart a state overview and a state policy on climate change, we are leading ourselves down a path of start and stop that is not helpful for our state residents and our state government. So with that, I look forward to a discussion and questions from the committee when we conclude our comments. Thank you very much for this opportunity. And now turn it over to the next speaker, Sam Schimmel.
Thank you, Mayor Hopkins. I just wanted to comment on my appreciation for your review of the history of 30 years of the record, and also to point out that these documents, I hope, are not hidden from the public. They are available on BASIS under the record for this committee meeting today on March 17th, 2020, under Community and Regional Affairs documents, all three documents that your team has presented the committee with are archived and available to the public right now. So thank you so much for that. Sam Schimmel, are you available?
Yes, I think I'm with you guys. Can you hear me?
We hear you. Put your name and affiliation on the record and go ahead with your testimony.
All righty. Thank you. So hello, everybody. My name is Sam Schimmel. I'm Kenai Indian and Siberian Yupik Eskimo. I served previously on the Climate Action Leadership Team for Alaska and currently serve on the Climate Action Technical Committee for the National Congress of American Indians. And so I just want to, before I start, say thank you to the Community and Regional Affairs Committee and then also to Tim Clark for bringing this together. It's an important issue that deserves time. And so today I'm going to talk a little bit about kind of what climate action means for Native Alaska and for rural Alaska and Village Alaska, along with the role of youth in the process that took place to kind of bring out these recommendations that are now in front of you guys. And so just to give a little bit of background on that, kind of the importance, we hear a lot about climate change, what it means. We hear a lot about subsidence, what it means. But I think very rarely do we actually understand what it feels like. I grew up partly in St. Lawrence Island, Yamble, in the Bering Straits, where we grew up in a community of about 800 people where everybody was Alaska Native. There was maybe four people who were not, and they were the teachers in the school. And where we were, you hunted for everything that you ate. We had a small village school, but it wasn't, a small village store, rather, but it wasn't something that you could go and really get a full meal at. It was incredibly expensive, and you really just couldn't afford to buy food there. And so largely the community, and still the community, relies on traditional foods and traditional ways of knowing and being to survive. And so what I reflect on is being a little kid, and we would go out in a whaling boat. As a little boy, your job is to bail out a boat. And you start hunting from a young age because you have to begin providing for your family and providing for your community. And so as a little boy, I remember every day we'd go to my great uncle's house. He was kind of the traditional weatherman. He had been kind of brought up in the way of knowing and observing that's been present in our community for thousands of years. And he'd tell us which way to go. You could go east, you could go west, you could go south, you could go north. And he would tell us which way was safe and which way the animals were. We'd go and we'd find the animals and you'd be safe. This is how you kind of decided where to go. And towards the end of his life and the end of my time there, he was no longer able to tell us the ways to go. He would always tell us these weather patterns are moving, they're changing, they're different, they're not as predictable as they once were. And so what that meant was that our traditional knowledge was no longer holding the role that it once did, and we could no longer rely on it. We're watching as there's sea ice disappearing in the Bering Strait. This year we're very lucky to have a large ice pack, but in years past what that has meant is that walrus, one of the critical foods that we eat and that we rely on, aren't able to be harvested. And so that results in the USDA having to fly in canned salmon to support our diets because we don't have enough food. And so what's happening is our grocery store, the Bering Sea, is changing. And so in order to allow our Native communities, the Native communities like mine, to continue to exist, it's important that there's climate mitigation and climate adaptation that takes place. And so that's where the Climate Action Leadership Team kind of came in. In our work, what we tried to do and what we worked very hard on doing is making sure that Native ways of being were not impacted in our recommendations, making sure that traditional communities who hunted were still able to hunt and traditional communities that still gathered were able to gather. By building in mechanisms to allow for these practices to continue. Right now, you're watching as kind of larger seas and a lack of ice makes hunting dangerous, makes it difficult. And so figuring out ways to allow for maybe different times of harvest was one of the key portions of the recommendations that we gave. The integration of traditional ecological knowledge with scientific background to create kind of a cohesive climate policy and policy recommendations regarding kind of all aspects of these types of actions. And so what we hope is that our communities can continue to exist and continue to carry on as we have for thousands of years in the face of climate change. And that's kind of where those recommendations in your guys' hands come in. And they were, well, I think another important thing to talk about was the role of youth in making these recommendations. We held several, as you heard from Luke, we held several sessions where people were able to come in and give feedback. And I think one of the more salient ones in my mind was the one that was given in Anchorage, where we had about 40 youth from around the state of Alaska coming together, reading over the recommendations, giving recommendations, asking questions, and kind of putting together kind of a cohesive effort to kind of insert a youth voice and insert kind of a different perspective into the recommendations. And it was amazingly clear that from the youth of our state that there was a need for climate action, and it wasn't always clear exactly what that was. But what we were able to agree on is what is kind of put forth in the recommendations. And so I think to echo those who spoke before me, it's important that we're able to have a policy plan, a kind of recommendation list that's put together by people from diverse backgrounds. We, as we had said, had members from fishing communities in Southeast Alaska, members of the Native communities on the North Slope, the CEO of VP Alaska, representatives from Isabelle Coal, kind of many of the stakeholders that will be critical in making sure that there is action. And one of the things that was very important in especially the youth list and kind of all of our discussions around these policies was that we wanted to kind of secure and perpetuate life that has been taking place in Alaska, but do that without negatively impacting the economic outlook of the state. So figuring out how we can adapt to climate change without completely shutting away, kind of changing how we continue to do business, and finding a meaningful solution in that space. And so what I, again, just want to say to you is thank you for you guys' time, and thank you guys so much for putting this together and giving this space and time. I know there's a lot of other things going on in the world right now, but climate change is one thing that won't be going away. And in order to continue to live in Alaska, where my family lives and gambles, will need to be mitigative and adaptive measures taken. Thank you for putting the work that's been done and your minds together to make a better Alaska and to make an easier Alaska for Alaska Natives and everybody else. But thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Sam. Really appreciate your participation this morning, and also of Luke Hopkins and Mike Levine. Any questions from the committee members for these gentlemen? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Drummond. Mr. Schimmel, I guess I'm going to jump ahead to today in modern times, and I know that you are in, I believe it's Stanford. Can you... Let's talk about how the COVID virus is impacting you and whether your university is shutting down, just out of curiosity, because, of course, you're close but far away.
Yes. Well, that seems to be one of the major topics of day. And right now, so Stanford did shut down. We all caught our you need to leave notice last week. Everybody has to be moved out by tomorrow. The kind of the Bay Area is on a shelter in place order suggestion, and so I'm trying to get back to Alaska today. It seems like it's all come to a head very quickly, and we're just packing up our stuff and trying to get out. So that's what's happening. As for educational opportunities, it has had major impact. A lot of our education professionals may not be well versed in the usage of technology, and so a lot of our classes have been kind of postponed and are taking an odd lilt. But other than that, I think the major worry for most students and most people is their family and their elders. So that's where my mind is.
Thank you, and thank you for that. Of course, when we planned this week, that's the royal we, when we asked our staff to find, you know, with some thematic concerns from the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, our issues were an attempt to dialogue about how communities across Alaska were preparing for the community impacts of climate change, both, you know, permafrost melting and wildfires coming and water shortages. You know, we were focusing sort of on last year's summer crisis, bringing to a head many symptoms and signs of the, graphic climate change. And we're slightly derailed in our focus with this escalation of concern around COVID-19, and yet our communities are probably this summer also going to be faced with the ongoing environmental concerns of climate change, with now an overlay of a pandemic and economic impacts. So our intention to dialogue and talk about emergency response preparedness and impacts for communities across Alaska who in all likelihood don't have large budgets to talk about relocation or water system development or preparedness for wildfires reemerging after the winter thaw. But we appreciate you on the climate change task force and leadership team doing the work to lay out a plan that Alaska should be addressing. I probably shouldn't ramble anymore because I get to the darkness pretty quickly of we're not really going to, I anticipate that we are not going to have the economics to focus on any of these recommendations this fiscal year.
I appreciate that, Co-Chair Hannon. We've been hit with this, having to deal with the novel coronavirus and its impacts, and trying to keep it from spreading in Alaska. But among the things that I became aware of yesterday, and of course I should know this, there are dozens of communities that do not have running water, and we're telling people to wash their hands on a regular basis. This is a critical problem. There are a lot of these issues that should have been taken care of over the last 30 years, as Mayor Hopkins pointed out. We've known about these issues, and in this, with the background of climate change, we should have been able to bring our communities up to speed. And now here we are, having to shelter in place and wait for the wave to hit us, as Dr. Ann Zink said in the press conference yesterday. I know Mr. Levine was planning a wrap-up remarks. Mr. Levine, would you like to do that now or take another question or two from the committee?
Thank you. I'm happy to just give my couple of sentences wrap-up, and also to just briefly respond to the comments that Co-Chair Hannon made. One of the things that was a focus of the discussions among the leadership team and the public comments we heard were the overlapping nature of climate change. The changes that are happening in our communities are not amenable to being separated out, right? As Sam said, the food security and economic opportunity overlap with the environment in communities and overlap with culture. These are not things that can be separated. Climate change is not a separate issue. It's an issue for our communities. And as you noted, it overlaps with now our response to COVID-19. So this is an issue that's integral to the future of our state and our communities, our livelihoods and economies. And I wanted to conclude on a personal note to me. My son is 8 years old. He's a fourth generation Alaskan. And I believe firmly that we all have an obligation to ensure that he and his peers and their children and children's children have the same opportunities here in Alaska as we do and as his grandparents and great grandparents did. I understand that we might not all agree about the best way to get there, and that's okay. But we've got to just keep trying to figure it out, and that's what we've been talking about here, and that's what made the Climate Action for Alaska leadership team successful. We committed to working together in what I think of as the Alaska way, where we see big problems and work through our differences toward a common goal. We're going to be confronted with that with the coronavirus now, and we encourage all encourage the legislator to continue to lead those difficult conversations and to engage Alaskans in all of them. So that's more or less the tenor, kind of future, looking to the future that I'd hope to end on, and definitely happy to take any more questions that there might be.
Anyone else? All right, Mr. Levine, thank you so much. And to Mayor Hopkins and to Sam Schimmel as well, really appreciate your taking the time to be available for the committee today. As you mentioned, we are indeed focused on the impacts of COVID-19, and it seems to be overshadowing everything. So really appreciate your time today. And hearing no additional questions, Representative Hannon, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Drummond. I just wanted to make sure for anyone who is listening online, and we did print several copies of the plan recommendations from the Climate Action Leadership Team and the policy recommendations. We had anticipated a large public interest, but of course, access to the building is limited. So if you email or call or write to here at the committee, we can get you copies of that. And like Chair Drummond said, they are available on basis if you want to print your own copy. And of course, these issues are not going to be resolved even after we talk about it one more time. And we need to keep them on our focus of concern over the next couple of years, because we need to begin addressing the complex issues that are facing our communities.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hannon. Our next House Community and Regional Affairs meeting is tentatively scheduled for Thursday, March 24th. We are hereby adjourned at 8:45 a.m. Thank you.